he's coming up with answers. In this case, you see him on the other side of this. I thought he's very skilled as an interviewer here in episode 32 of this podcast.
He does two things. One, his energy is really good.
It is.
And then two, much like when he answers questions at a press conference, he actually gives you information. Now, Cal is getting into that age where a lot of these old heads, they interrupt you with the answer, because he was saying to him, if you listen to the clip, he said, I'm fine with all the players coming back. Cal wanted to get his point across that he's, you know.
Then he was like, we're going to do that. Yeah. We're going to do that. But Cal's like, I got to be
my get my point in here that I coached 50 of these guys and I want them all back. You know, it's like, oh, Cal, we got you, bro. You can do it.
Like, we hear you and yes. We're going to do it that way. You don't have to keep stressing right. That it's got to be your way, because that's the way we're going to do
like,
it.
He's like, we're doing it your
way. We're
going
to do it. Whatever we have to do to get you to play this game, we'll bring back 150 of them if we need to, Cal. And Cal's big thing is just, it ain't about me.
Right.
It ain't about me.
Right.
It ain't about me. Just make sure my players are back. And then I will allow it.
Hilarious.
So he kind of, I love Cal to death, and clearly there, like we talked about yesterday, there's a reverence on the part of Penny for Cal because of the heights that Cal took it to, and Penny's literally watching from the front row as one of the big donors back then, so proud of this thing he had poured into, and watching where Cal had it. So when you get him in, they called him the architect. Essentially, in terms of the way
they marketed it that way for
this podcast, they call him the architect, and there's clearly a reverence for Cal that comes across. And Penny, he's no longer the signature shoe celebrity guy. It doesn't feel in sitting in these shoes interviewing Cal. He's the humble and Penny. There's plenty of humility in Penny, but it comes across as I'm talking to one of the goats here. How do you do it? And when you do that with Cal, it's going to come out to be a great interview. They one of the other things they touched on, besides the St. Jude game that we're all hoping comes together because it's going to get done Cal's way, is Cal talked about how the league had gotten more physical, the NBA. Now, one of the things we typically say about the NBA is it's not like the old days, the 90s. You've heard it from me, Mr. Michael Jordan, Stan, that, man, they're not knocking guys like they used to. But remember what's come up this year is OKC has sort of been this throwback. Right, the way they're defending and feeling like fouling you, and Drew Hill's talked about it, and how it's almost like the NBA, because you could call a foul on every play, doesn't do it, and OKC plays this physical style of defense that's sort of a throwback. And Cal brings it up, a former NBA coach himself with the Nets, and they discuss his short time with the Nets before he came to Memphis. But Cal brings it up, don't you like that the game's more physical now? Now, again, remember, there's teams like the Celtics and everything else that are shooting 50, 60 threes per game and not necessarily and sort of playing more of that Harden, James, hey, we'll outshoot you. We're not necessarily going to beat you up in beating you. But we saw through the playoffs, and particularly with OKC, there was, this more physical brand worked. And so Cal talked to Penny about, don't you like to see that back like it was when you were in the league? And they both discussed it almost like, we had to turn it off back in the day, because there was no defense. And Penny even alluded and talked about all those threes that would be shot. Yeah, I couldn't watch it. Cal saying, I turned the TV off. That stuff wasn't basketball. And so to hear them both sort of be re-energized by what they think is maybe the NBA going back to more of a physicality. What we know is we're watching OKC, and look at what these teams have done in the draft and what they've done with free agency. You're going out and getting more physical guys that can be 3-and-D. Right? Not just one thing or the other, but can play physical like OKC has got up and down the lineup. You're looking for those types of guys, maybe, so you can be the more physical outfit like OKC proved to be this year, and it was a difference maker for them. I don't know that we're all the way full back to the 90s like Cal was trying to make it seem like, this physical style. I think OKC might be leading us back there. If it's going to happen, guys like John Morant, going to have to be prepared for it if we're getting back to that, because everybody's going to be trying to emulate what OKC is doing and playing a more physical brand of ball because you're deeper and you've got more guys and bodies to do it with. If we're going to do that, John going to need to have his armor on. But it was interesting to hear them talk to not just about the college state of the game, NIL, how you need guardrails, but they talked about the state of the NBA as well, sort of the old days when Penny was playing, how much more physical it was, and how we might be sort of getting back to that with OKC. Real interesting stuff. Suggest you go back, get all those 35 minutes or so, 2 Cents podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts, with John Calipari. And we're expecting, at some point, a Kelvin Sampson edition of that as well. So, got plenty to do, including hour number 3. We'll get you on the other side. Going to be talking to Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports about the NFL, about the Miami-Pittsburgh trade. That and more on the other side. You're listening to Jason John, 929 FM ESPN. How can leaders champion your financial story? Well, let me tell you. First, you got to join the family. And that leader's family is growing. We are a part of that. Got little Chris hooked up with a Future Leader Savings Account. Oh, Jeff Calkins. He's got his lovely wife hooked up. He's part of the leader's family. And you can be, too. They're not-for-profit financial institutions. Fully owned by members, operates for your benefit. That's what they do when it's owned by you. Not just operating for that profit. It's going to go up to all those bank presidents and all that. No, this is going to go back to you. And how does it do that? Well, it means lower rates for you. And right now on HELOCs, home equity lines of credit, they've got rates as low as 5.99 APR. Borrowing is more affordable than ever with a HELOC from Leaders Credit Union. You can learn more and see full details and disclosures at leaderscu.com/ESPN. Learn all about what Leaders, what the family can do for you in terms of your financial journey. You might learn that a Compass Black credit card will help you out through the rest of the summer. You can earn 3% cash back on every purchase and 0% introductory APR for 15 months. No categories, no limits. Set up direct deposit, enjoy no annual fees. It's time your credit card worked as hard as you do. Again, to see full details and disclosures, visit leadercu.com/ESPN. Leaders is federally insured by the NCUA and is your financial champion. We had discussed it yesterday, a cruise story, and that story was in Respect Burgers. It was a Respect Burger to all 4,000 people that had survived a 2013 cruise event called the Poop Cruise. No, it's been nicknamed that. And the reason we were talking about something that happened way back in 2013 yesterday is because Netflix has recently, here this year, has put out, I think it's 2 weeks old, something like that. This, again, it's called Trainwreck. Talking about a ship cruise, though. Poop Cruise is the name of it, yeah. And it's about, again, 2013, 4,000 passengers who were stranded when the boat suddenly went without power.
Oh, no.
Well, how does it become the Poop Cruise? Well, the power controlled the plumbing. And once there was no power, there was no plumbing. Things started backing up, and they were out there for... So we discussed it and how, you know, stories like that will keep me from ever taking a cruise. And here we are, another day, another cruise story. This one much more recent in terms of it happening. Happened on June 29th, which would have been Sunday, correct? Yes, would have been Sunday. Yesterday was the 30th. And a father, reading from the story, has been being praised as a hero for jumping in. We discussed it. After his five-year-old daughter, who had fallen overboard on a Disney cruise ship. If you've watched CNN this morning, see some pictures of it. There's been plenty of Facebook accounts of the people, both that were on the boat, of others. The Disney Dream was returning to Fort Lauderdale from a four-night Bahamian cruise, according to Newsweek. Passengers on the Disney Dream shared the details of the incident that started when a girl, broad daylight, fell from the fourth deck and was quickly followed by her father, who jumped in to rescue her. I thought about this. We didn't know initially how old the girl was. 5 years old. She's going over. She's probably, maybe you're screaming at any age going over that boat, but at five, with all the flailing and stuff that's probably happening, I mean, it's going to send you in an absolute panic as a father, in a panic that probably just leads you to go straight in. You don't even think about it.
No, you're just bailing over.
You're just bailing over.
Got to go get my kid. That's all I'm thinking about at that time. I don't care.
I haven't thought about what's in the water. I haven't thought about what's going to happen when I hit the water. I've only thought I have to go after my kid.
Save them above the water, because otherwise they drown immediately.
I can't go get help. Right. By the time I do that, my kid's going to be under the water.
Got to go.
I'm imagining this is almost an involuntary response.
I think that's you nailed it.
Your body's going to take you in.
I'm going.
Especially when your five-year-old
kid is in the water, I'm going, and then hopefully there's cameras watching. You're not even thinking about that.
Especially if she's saying, Daddy, as she goes down.
Yeah.
I mean, just thinking about that scares me. Father jumps right in, and he is able to basically dog paddle after rescuing her for about 20 minutes. Anywhere from between, I heard Charles Fishman talking about the story, too. It's captivated folks, because you put yourself in those shoes. You think about, could I have done that? 10 to 20 minutes he was in the water. Most have leaned toward it. Had to be at least 20 minutes. He's dog paddling. It's different because, you know, maybe some of you are regularly in good enough shape that you could do that. Dog paddle for 20 minutes with a kid on your back, maybe panicking, maybe not, in the middle of an ocean, and you think about it, oh, that's not a problem. For me, who's not a frequent swimmer, a guy who's trying to get into shape, getting into his 50s, I think about Probably not at some point, because what's going to happen to me, Brad, is it's going to become mental. And if I'm panicking, if that ship is not coming back fast enough, and here's the problem when that happens, you can wear yourself out, right, in the panicking, and how fast I'm trying to doll pedal my legs or whatever else, I'm wearing myself out in that 20 minutes I'm going to need to stay up, right? I'm thinking I might get into a panic or whatever and not be able to. So to be able to do that, incredible. Even if, you know,
amazing,
you have this built up adrenaline because it's your daughter, whatever else, I don't care. To be able to pull that off, keep the, you know, the presence of mind is the phrase I'm looking for, to be able to keep your cool, pull this off, and allow the boat to get back to you. Just amazing. Apparently, as soon as it happened, the Mr. MOB, which is man overboard, the ship's emergency alert went right off, which in turn allowed it to just be 20 minutes or so for that boat to get turned around for them to send the rescuers out there. But a story that could have gone a completely different way, and a story, I was listening to Charles too about this, it's even more frightening to me when I think about, you know, that. In fact, I haven't been on a cruise and what could happen. Like, a lot of times, what happens with cruise ship deaths is it's not like this in broad daylight. What you'll have is some people that have drank too much,
yeah,
or something.
Something happens.
And at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m., mm-hmm, they're going overboard, mm-hmm, right, somewhere they shouldn't be or whatever else. And nobody ever hears about it because the person's just too drunk to
wear
the screen. And then nobody saw it or anything else. That's kind of a chilling thought to think about. Very scary thought to think about. You don't find that out, till somebody gets the room, mm-hmm, that was with them, or maybe even if they're by themselves, but they get back or whatever else, and you're missing the count or whatever else. But point being, what a hero it was. You think you would have had the presence of mind to be able to keep – are you a good enough swimmer? Forget jumping in. We both agree.
Yeah.
That's involuntary. Our bodies would have taken us out the window,
yep,
to go save our daughter or our son. But do you think you would – are you in good enough shape to doll paddle for 20 minutes?
I'm pretty good.
In the middle of the ocean?
I've done it before, not in the middle of the ocean, but I think my swimming skill set – and I also – again, I don't want to act like I'm some hero, but because I think adrenaline takes over as a parent many, many times, and that's probably what happened here when that dude bailed over the side to go swim out to his daughter and then doggy paddle and hold her up till you get help.
Right.
I think – here's a good example of something that happened when I was a kid. I was on a three-wheeler going straight at a rock pile, and Jason – when I say I was straight at a rock pile, it was one of those where the three-wheeler would have come back around and crushed me. And one of the dads over by my old man ran across probably about, I don't know, 30, 40 yards in a really fast amount of time that you would have never guessed him do it.
Mm.
My point being, something happens, and he caught it. He caught the three-wheeler and before it crushed me and probably would have really either paralyzed me or I was 10. What it's one of those. So I say all that to
hero.
I tell that his name is Bill Brash. Shout out to Bill. But I remember that story because Bill was, he was a big belly, beer gut, middle-aged dude.
Yeah.
Never would have, but instinctually something happens as a parent when your kid or your friends of your kids are in danger. My point being, I probably would have bailed over the side. I would have hoped to God and prayed that I would be able to do it, and I think I might.
Maybe our adrenaline would have kept us up.
I think it might, Jason. If you're a decent swimmer,
uh-huh,
and again, I'm
decent.
I pray I'm never decent.
I think that adrenaline kicks in, and you're able to stay up 20 minutes.
I think you –
because you have to survive. It's the same thing as going in after, in a way.
I'm in the water. Am I going
to stay up for her?
I have to like paddle. Oh, maybe there's a boat, you know, maybe the lifeboat comes out. I don't ever want to be in that situation, but I pray I would be able to do it, but I don't know. But I think the answer is you probably would. You probably would.
What happens when you see a shark in that water?
How
does it change your mental level and your peace and ability to do it then? You see a fin in that water.
Well, how many times in our life?
Not that I know that, you know, if it was in these waters outside of Fort Lauderdale, but still, if you can see a freaking... You know, I'm just saying,
but anytime,
that would add a level of distress for me.
Anytime in our lives, whether we're praying or we're getting through a moment in our lives that's difficult.
You put the danger to the side.
You have to put something in your brain that says, I have to get through whatever is happening to me at this given point. And I
put the fear to the side.
Yeah. And that happens in lower level situations that are much lower leverage than this, right? I mean, you do that probably occasionally when you're trying to do something, right? I don't want to do XYZ, and yet I'm going to just force myself to get through whatever.
Absolutely.
This is.
Yeah, it's laser focused.
Yeah.
We're going
to get through this moment.
It probably happens to you in a sense where you have to save a loved one's life.
Yes.
I'm hoping that's the case.
That's scary as hell, though. Like
how do we have an opening that big where my kid can get out? My kid's five.
Exactly.
that's a whole nother subject for Disney. I'm sure they're going to have to address at some point. But thank goodness, thank God in this case, that this father was able to go in and get his five-year-old and survive it all and get pulled back in.
You bring up a good point, which is how many cruise ships do people that we know cruise on, and you don't hear about these because people are bailing over. It's like bridges. You don't talk about it or they don't publicize it, but it's happening more than you think it is.
Yes, because they've just slipped in the water, and like there was nobody there to see them go in because they had too much to drink
or
were in a place
of
the boat that they shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
You hope that they were with somebody that's going to notice them going immediately.
Right.
Otherwise, you ain't going to find out till you get back to the dock.
Oh, Charlie's in the bottom of the ocean.
Just done slipped down. Bloop, 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 bloop. Had too much. You were overserved.
Couple of 20 beverages or so.
And that's the scariest thing ever, just to think about it.
Like, I'm not a big cruise guy. Like, do you have a desire to go on a cruise?
My wife has asked me. It's a no-go.
I'm a no-go, too.
I don't
want
to be in the middle of the water.
Hell no.
And I didn't even need to see poop cruise. I don't want to get stranded. I hate the movie Titanic. When dude goes down, he lets Rose have the headboard, and he just goes down.
Yes.
Leonardo.
I got no
interest.
Into
the abyss.
Yeah.
I've never wanted to be on any kind of boat that can even potentially happen on. I don't care how many lifeboats are around the thing. Sea's a big thing, and you can't see underneath it.
No.
We haven't even talked about the whales and the sharks, bro.
No. Like, people always point out to me, they're like, well, Brad, when you get on this thing, it has everything. It has a mall. It has a casino. And I said, so does the mainland. Like, we have all of those things here. We can do all of those things and not get on a boat.
Y'all act like those things can't. You know, there can't be a problem that they can't.
Yes!
You can't hit
people
something
get seasick,
or power goes out.
It's expensive. They end up, I know everybody talks about the unlimited buffet, but like I heard a lot of stories of people getting sick on those things.
Man, have you watched this Netflix thing?
I haven't seen the poop cruise.
No more spoilers on that because I probably did. But apparently the language when you bought these tickets was so loose that it didn't even say this has to be a suitable boat when you're getting on.
Oh.
So you're buying these tickets. Right. There was some. That's what I'm saying. Carnival, in the language of the boat, the thing doesn't even have to be like, you know, sailable or whatever the hell it is. Like you're agreeing to be on just a piece of you know what. Apparently back then. Now, again, this was 2013.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's been updated since then. But that's how, you know, you get on a boat that should have been in maintenance 10 years ago.
Wow.
Because you've signed this thing that says, oh, man, we just expect it to be safe because, like you said, it looks like land. There's a casino over here,
like,
and there's a playpen over here for my kid. I'm going to throw the kid in there, and it feels like I'm on land. But you are not.
No.
And we have had two reminders of that here recently with the Netflix documentary, and then now, again, this man having to go in and save his daughter. I may never cruise. I may never do it, especially with these two stories.
This was the one that was like, okay, I'm not doing this.
Done.
So when
done.
Faith asks you the next time, but, like, look, we got a couple problems here. We got poop cruise, and now we got, like, they got to shore up the side of this thing.
It has to be something that spends the majority of the time at the islands as opposed to we're on water for too long.
I'm not interested.
Old Smooth don't want to get stuck out
there. No, I don't see Smooth getting on there.
I thank goodness I'm past the age of Chris trying to jump out at five years old. You would think an 11-year-old going to
know
better than
that. Yeah, you would think they had better sense than
that. Because I have to go in after him. I can't do it.
I think you're making the right decision.
Nah, yeah. Crazy stories. Again,
that's
if you haven't
wild,
seen the
dude.
Netflix documentary, Trainwreck, Poop Cruise, and then check out CNN, the latest on this hero that went in and got his daughter on a Disney cruise. Hopefully the cruise news gets better going forward. We're going to talk to Jason Fitz going forward. As a matter of fact, on the other side of this break, we're going to talk some NFL with him. We will talk some NBA and the movement and what he likes, particularly as it relates to the West and what Denver has done, what Houston has done, and where the Grizzlies now might sit in his eyes after a first day of moves. We'll do all that when we get back. We'll have Jason Fitz. You listen to Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Fitz, Yahoo Sports football host and Fox Sports radio host, Grammy-winning musician. He does it all. He's also, like my partner, a diehard Raiders fan. We let John go, Fitzy, for a little pre-July 4th celebration. I don't know if you, I think you know, July 4th is his birthday. I think he's headed up to Washington with the fam. He's like Clark Griswold. He's doing a little Lampoon's Vacation, and we'll allow him to do that. So I got you all to myself here. For those that do not follow Jason already, make sure you're doing so on X and Instagram, at Jason Fitz. As we said, he's a talent at it all, and he can help me understand. What's Pittsburgh thinking, Fitzy? What's the general thinking of Mike Tomlin and going out and acquiring another tight end to put next to Pat Freiermuth, I'm assuming, right? And moving on from Minkah Fitzpatrick to bring in a Jalen Ramsey, who still, we say, is still solid, but is definitely a step down from when he was one of the best corners in the league. Maybe so much so that they're going to move him to safety. What was the point on the Pittsburgh side of things, Fitzy?
This is a team that is desperately trying to move towards being competitive right now without giving up future assets. So what you see is somebody grasping at straws late. That's never a great way to do business. For me, Jalen Ramsey, remember, they already got Darius Slay, right? So Darius Slay is going to already be one of their starting corners. Yep. They got a young corner and Porter that they believe in. So could they be moving Ramsey to slot or to safety? And is it really going to be better than Minka is? I think that's questionable. And for everyone that's sitting there saying, yeah, but look at Jonnu Smith, I will remind everybody, the breakthrough for Jonnu Smith came by getting away from Arthur Smith as his offensive coordinator. So now the guy who had his most success with Mike McDaniel as his head coach goes back to Arthur Smith, where he did more last year in production than he did in any 2 years combined when Jonnu played for the Titans. And wow. So, yeah, I don't think that this makes – I think Jonnu Smith is a huge loser in this because he's going to go somewhere where he's got less targets, less opportunity. He's going to be utilized less. And Arthur Smith, I don't get it. It feels to me like they're playing some version of Madden, but they're playing like Madden 2019. So they're coming out with these names that in 2019 would have been epic. I understand that Pittsburgh feels pressure, and I think that's the real indicator here is that Mike Tomlin and the Steelers feel pressure to advance in the playoffs. But – man, you can acquire Jalen Ramsey all day. That does not make you better than Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. That does not make you better than Josh Allen in Buffalo. So, does it make him better? I don't think so. I think this is all sort of a wash. And it just feels like for the first time in generations, we're watching a Steelers organization chase its tail. I don't really get it.
Yep, and that's why I wonder if you can, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but we discussed it yesterday, if it does go off the rails, or let's just say you get to the playoffs and you don't win a game, like, are we comfortable now, especially looking at the decision-making, that you're going to let Mike Tomlin help pick your next quarterback and put together that plan for him? I'd be wondering if, and especially in the saving of the future assets, you're saying, you know what, we've reached a crossroads, we tried this thing, got a little desperate last year, and maybe it's a moving on for both sides. I have to go back, though. If you're looking for, right, the perfect season for Aaron Rodgers so that you do get the maximum out of this, isn't addressing the offensive line, right, with his inability to move, we think, wouldn't that be the bigger priority? And have they done enough to that point for that? Because yes, I see the weapons, but what about the line?
It's a massive priority, and no, they haven't done enough. And then again, I'm going to go back to Arthur Smith. Like, when's the last time we watched an Arthur Smith offense and said, oh, my God, look at how much they utilize that star power? Like, anybody that plays fantasy football got their butts kicked by those Falcons teams that Arthur Smith was in charge of, where every year we were like, oh, no, they got too many weapons this year not to be great. And it's like, oh, it turns out.
It's so true. It didn't pan out. You're so right. It never came together like we thought it would. It didn't.
I mean, right now, if I was looking at the crystal ball, if you look at the schedule for the Steelers, it starts very easy. I think the Steelers are going to start really hot, and everybody's going to say, oh, my God, Tomlin got it right. The Steelers got it right. And about midseason, that schedule turns, and it turns into a gauntlet the back half of the year. I think that the Steelers end up with their first losing record under Tomlin, and this becomes Tomlin fatigue, and it's the reason that they eventually part ways, because it's just run its course. But I also think that anybody right now that could hire Mike Tomlin would hire Mike Tomlin. Like, I don't think Tomlin is the problem. I just think that when you don't have that easy answer and you're in the same division as Lamar and Joe Burrow and in the same conference as Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, I look around and I think all of this is for what? It's window dressing. It's putting lipstick on a pig like this, that you can go get these things, but you don't have the quarterback that you would need to have. Because, look, the better team won the Super Bowl. The better team beat the better quarterback. But you still got to have a quarterback that you think can get you there. And in that situation, you got to have a quarterback around a great team with, I don't know, an epic offensive line.
Yep.
That doesn't describe the Steelers. So they're still at best upper-middle-class team in the AFC to me. And that's, like, what do we do? They're going to be a better talking point than they are in actual football.
I could not agree more, and I think I'm right with you, because I asked the question of John yesterday. I want to ask this of you. Let's just assume they decide we're moving on from Mike Tomlin. I'm with you. I think whether Mike Tomlin decides to sit out for a year, he wants to go to TV or not, he's going to get a job. He'll be fine. But back to Pittsburgh, with a franchise as storied as them that loves to stick with their coach, right? We're going to have him, not just going to have him, you know, a while, but a decade plus is where we're going to have him. Is there a sitting head coach in this league that you look at that's, I don't know, I'm thinking, well, maybe he's got to be on the younger side, Fitzy, because Lord knows those Steelers love to keep their coach for a while. Is there a guy that's like a no-brainer right now? You look around the league and you say, yeah, as a storied franchise, I want him to come in. I know he's going to have a quarterback plan and everything else. And, yeah, he's going to be an upgrade from Mike Tomlin. Does that guy stand out to you right now?
No, not at all. But the one thing I'll say is that the Steelers found Tomlin, right?
They did.
And they found power before that. So, like, they organizationally seem to have the ability to find a coach and then give him time. Like, I think – giving him time is just such a huge part of this process, you know. So they're capable of doing that. I just look, I don't think a breakup of the Steelers and Tomlin is the right move. I just think it's the inevitable move when people sit here and say, well, look at all these big names they've cleared and how much money they spent this year and what they were trying to build this year, and they still only won 9 games and lost in the first round of the playoffs. Like, that's what people are going to say. And I would also go back to Steelers fans and say, hey, you know what's worse than being stuck in the middle class? Stinking, being awful. And, like, you just forget how hard it is. This is the same thing living in Connecticut. I have yelled this repeatedly to Patriots fans. Like, you don't understand what it was like pre-Tom Brady because you don't remember how hard it is to get a quarterback, right? Mm. Like, Colts fans went from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck, and then they just presumed that AR was going to be the next one of those because that's what they got used to. And then they wake up one day and they're like, oh, wait, this is how the rest of the world lives? Like, Steelers fans are sitting here, woe is me, that all they ever do is make the playoffs. Yeah, live. I don't know, 5-6 years in a row with five wins. Then talk to me about how bad this is.
I've always trusted Tomlin in a way that, okay, you know, even if I don't like it up front, it's going to end up working out. And I just, when you're making that final Aaron Rodgers, you know, where you're allowing a guy that typically sets the standard himself, right, to come in with you where you've always set the standard, if that's not just the sort of writing on the wall. You said the key word for me, like, it's like desperate. It makes me think that maybe Tomlin's desperate to sort of sign. I've said this deal with the NFL devil, that's probably going too far in my description of Aaron Rodgers, but that's kind of the desperation it feels like to me on his part.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like the collateral damage of what Aaron Rodgers does when he leaves a franchise.
Yes.
I mean, are the Jets not even on par? How much worse off are the Jets today after a 2-year Aaron Rodgers experiment? Like, that's real. And that's part of what, as much as I understand Aaron Rodgers is a Hall of Famer and blah, 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 I get that. But I do think that there's a nuanced conversation that belongs to happen about the collateral damage that certain guys do.
Yep.
And he's at the top of that list. Like, he's a culture destroyer from everything that, you know, it takes. I think it's really tough to look at what's happened to the Jets and not sit here if you're the Steelers and say, man, are you 100% sure you can survive what Aaron Rodgers is going to do to you? Because I'm not 100%.
No, I'm with you.
If Aaron Rodgers is the you know, sort of the nail in the coffin and Tomlin gets fired and all of a sudden there's a new coach coming in and they blow this whole roster up and they start a rebuild process and it looks like New England where 1 year with somebody and they get fired and all of a sudden you're bringing somebody else in, like, mm-hmm. We're going to look back at this and say, man, how much damage can one man do? Because it's catastrophic.
Yep, and hopefully nobody else will be dumb enough to let him come in and do it again to you, you know, just for this guy to, yeah, you know, amuse himself for another year. Maybe at that point we'd be done with it. Turning you to the NBA real quick, Fitzy, and this one was a, you know, an eyebrow raiser for me, a shock to me, because, and we'd even said it, you know, why is Giannis not asking for a trade? Why is he not? Because Milwaukee seems to have no flexibility. Dame is hurting out for a year. What are they going to do? Giannis would want a title contender around him, but yet seems to be being quiet and fine. And I think we must have gotten our answer in terms of this news that they're moving off of Dame Lillard, going to stretch him, and they're bringing in Miles Turner. How impactful is this for Milwaukee in an East that we know is not going to have Haliburton with Indiana, Tatum with Boston? Is Milwaukee all of a sudden back in it, making moves like this?
Yeah, but isn't that, I mean, there's this moment where it just leaves a little bit of a in my mouth. Like, we just watched the Pacers go on this run that was so incredible. And then, you know, and this is why sometimes what we all do is just, it's such an exercise in futility, sitting here trying to figure out, well, this team's young, they're going to be good for several years. Yeah. I mean, think about being a Pacers fan today versus being a Pacers fan 2 weeks ago. It has to be just jarring at this point to see just the way your entire franchise changes by no Haliburton and no Turner, who throughout the course of the playoffs was, I think, a real stabilizing force over and over and over again. Now, in the meantime,
yeah, does this makes the Bucks, you know, better 100%. And I know Giannis has said he wasn't happy with the way the news went to Dame or whatever, but at some point, if you're Giannis, you just want to win. Does this make them more capable of doing that? Yeah. I also think if you're the Bucks, you kind of got to look at it and say, well, hell, now is the time. Let's go all in today, because we do know that there's enough Achilles injuries that it's not going to get easier in 2 years. This might be that little window. This is that pop moment you've got to have if you want to cut through. So, look, I think it's a significant move for Milwaukee. I think it's a significant move for the NBA because it likely keeps Giannis in Milwaukee. But also, it's just jarring to me to see. We don't see this necessarily in every other league. Like, we rarely see a superstar, you know, from the Chiefs suddenly changing teams. Yep. And it just happens so much in the NBA. It's just it breaks my heart for a fan base in Indiana that really watched a special offseason and now has to sit here and wonder how they'll ever get back.
No, I'm with you on that. And boy, we've seen it change quickly here. Now, some of that is players and be John Morant, you got to stay out on the floor, whether it's off court or on court. But to go from, you know, the 2 seed a couple straight years, Taylor Jenkins in the running for Coach of the Year, to where they were last year, we've seen how quick it can change. In terms of teams trying to get closer to OKC, I'd start with that Houston one. Is that going to be enough of a jump, bringing in KD? I think the Dorian Finney-Smith signing, you know, getting him away from the Lakers, bringing him to you, moving on from Jalen Green, inexperienced, is that enough of a move that gets them closer to OKC? Are you buying what Houston has done, sort of pushing in their chips?
Yeah, I am. But I also am buying what they've done, because to me, this is the best way to use a big-name free agent acquisition. It's like, hey, we built something we feel pretty darn good about. Now, instead of, like, we're not going to go out and try and build the big three coming here. We're not going to sit here and rebuild a whole roster around KD. We're going to do it the right way. And then when we get super close, and I mean the right way, because more often than not right now, the right way to build a championship team is not through free agency. Like, it's just, we just learned that, right? So what you have here is a Houston team that's like, hey, we've done the disciplined approach. We've built a young core on this roster that we feel really good about. We've got some pieces that we feel really strong about. And now we're going to go get one of the best players in the world. And we're going to trust that this best player in the world, who has proven that he can win championships in multiple cultures, is going to come in and bring some of that edge into this team. Yeah, I think it's substantial. It's significant. But I just got a scream from the mountaintops. You don't beat OKC unless you are 10 deep. And that's just
so true.
Everybody's going to, you are going to have to be able to run 10 on the floor to top this Oklahoma City team. And that's, I think, the scariest part for the next couple of years of OKC, is that they've got enough room, even with Shai Gilgeous Alexander, rightfully so, getting a monster deal today. Like, even with that, they've got the flexibility to put themselves in a situation to be who they are for the next several years. So I think, as much as I love this move for Houston, if I had to bet my house on somebody next year, it's still OKC. They're just too deep.
I'm with you. Would you, and be the final thing I ask you, does it add significantly to KD's legacy for you if he goes to Houston, helps Ime and those guys, this relatively young team, but I'm with you, they put together the right way. Does it add to his legacy in an impactful way that you're moving him up your sort of, you know, player rankings, guys like KD, those guys we look to as GOATs?
I think every time somebody wins a championship, you just got to pause and really kick the cap. You know, I think with the legacy conversation that we have so often, the hardest part for me is when people don't win championships, I don't hold it against them, because it's a team sport and an individual can't win. We've seen that, right? When you win a championship, though, I do think, like, two things can be true. I don't hold it against you if you don't, but if you do win a championship, I do think that's worth pressing pause on everything and saying, hey, let's respect and appreciate how much this is. And if you're KD and you've gone to championship series over and over and over again with different franchises, and you've been able to be sort of a superstar in the league no matter where you are, no matter where you play, I just think that at some point, unfortunately, we don't respect it in the moment. And you're always going to have the Stu Gotzes of the world that want to put their asterisks on any championship they want.
Right.
I believe truly that in 30 years, when we're talking about this generation, it's going to be just like the LeBron combo. Like, it's going to be, instead of being, oh, this guy's not good enough, he's a bum, it's going to be, oh, you think this guy's good? I watched KD play. You should have seen him. You know what I mean? Like, I think we'll appreciate Kevin Durant more in 15 years than we do today, which is a damn shame for the actual human being that constantly gets, you know, ridden today. I hope he finds the joy later in life that he deserves for the success he's had, because I think he's an all-time great.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Fitzy, you're beautiful, man. Appreciate you, brother. Have a great week.
Appreciate you, brother. Have a great week.
Yes, sir. He is Jason Fitz. Make sure you follow him on X and on Instagram at Jason Fitz. Always great content. Always great stuff. Always great insight. That's why we love having him on. We'll be back to wrap you up, get you set to hand off to Jeffrey and company. A little bit more to do, though, here with Brad and me. You're listening to Jason John, 92.9 FM ESPN. Talked about it. First day of July. It's hot and heavy in the NBA. News still coming in, obviously, and what a blockbuster for the Milwaukee Bucks, moving on from Dame Lillard. Bringing in Miles Turner, we discussed it. We have all, I'm sure you'll hear more discussed today. One thing today is, though, that we touched on but hadn't discussed is Bobby Bonilla Day. He gets $1.19 million and has since 2011 and will through 2035. It's 2025, so wow. He's still got plenty more, another 10 years of this. From the Mets, he is now 62 years old. And, we have a little fun with it every July 1st, and Bobby Bonilla just keeps smiling because it keeps coming in. There are other deferred payments going to star players, but not – the key there, stars. Shohei Ohtani has much of his salary deferred right now, and we can get into how much he's getting. ESPN's got this actually interestingly laid out. He's delaying payments on for $680 million of his $700 million. That he's got in the mega deal, he's deferring them till later. Bobby was at the end of his career when he got this deal.
Yeah.
And I believe at the time, instead of paying Bonilla the $5.9 million, that's all it was.
Yeah.
The Mets agreed to make annual payments of nearly $1.2 million for 25 years, starting July 1, 2011, and including a negotiated 8% interest. They could have just bought out the remaining $5.9 million on his contract back in 2000.
So in reading about this, it is crazy, and it's done. There are a couple reasons why they still do it often, because they can circumvent the rules in the case of Shohei, right? The new rule is you can front load it low, and then you're going to get your money, but we can screw around with the cap. Or in this case, Major League Baseball doesn't have a cap, but there's tax implications since he's in the state of California. From this perspective, in 1999, this deal with Bobby Bonilla was motivated because the Mets were in a terrible financial position, and then part of the investment group with the Mets was Bernie Madoff.
Right,
and Madoff was – this is exactly why Madoff was making all that money before, because he would do this kind of crap all the time. It's actually Bernie Madoff inspired in a way.
The Ponzi stuff.
Yeah, because what do you see? You see, well – you know, there's a little bit of money over time, like an investor, like your 401k. You know, that money doesn't just roll in. It's percentages of income, and in this case, whatever it is, 5%, 8%. I will say Bobby Bonilla has become a legend because of this.
Because of this deal.
Kid didn't know who Bobby Bonilla was until we started talking about it today.
Brad nailed it. At the time, Mets ownership was invested in that Bernie Madoff account that promised double-digit returns, and the Mets were poised to make a significant profit if the Madoff account delivered, but that did not work out. And under new owner Steve Cohen, who mentioned the possibility of actually celebrating this yearly, the Mets have embraced it. They don't do an annual celebration like he'd mentioned as a possibility, but they've embraced it as sort of a happy day. This was a bad deal. They should have just found a way to pay the $5.9 million back in 2000 up front. That's all they had to buy out. And what they've since paid is ridiculous in that sense. Now, there are other deals, and including how his compares to Shohei Ohtani's. Ohtani is going to get from 2034 to 2043, $68 million per year, because right now, he's being paid just $2 million.
It's a couple million dollars. Yeah, and think about it, though.
$2 million, bro.
If you can scrape by on the $2 million, you are saving a...
He's got like a New Balance deal. Scraping by, because he can put the $2 million with his other deals.
Other money.
I'm assuming New Balance and a bunch of other sponsors, and probably some that are Japanese and everything else.
Yes,
and he's got a ton of money over here.
Yes.
It's like Michael Jordan back in the day when most of his money was the endorsements as opposed to his salary from the Bulls.
My guess is that Ohtani has got some tax wizardry going on. I bet he's also got some tax wizardry because he's in California. There might be a situation where later on down the line, after he's old and he doesn't want to pay all those taxes from California because it's a screw job in California, that he moves to a state like Tennessee or, you know, some other place, and then they do the deferred payment through that particular state.
At that state.
So that you're not getting half of it whacked off, but pardon the expression, by the state of California. Right?
That, like, makes sense.
There's got to be some accountant that knows this better than I do.
34, again, when it kicks in 2034 to 2043, it'll be pumped up from $2 million to $68 million per year.
Wow.
So that's, I mean, that's insane. And especially compared
silly
to, what,
money.
To what Bobby's getting, what Bobby was selling for is just crazy. Max Scherzer is still going to get $105 million from the Nationals. That's going to be paid out through 2028. Now, a much shorter time frame, but my point is Max Scherzer's long gone from the Nationals. Is he not?
Then it probably is similar. Like, maybe
it's deferred. It's deferred money.
He's getting
his later on. It's still, he got over $100 million coming from the Nationals.
I wonder
if
you could also put it in a trust. Like, can you put it in a trust where you're not getting hammered for all that money? It's generational, obviously.
I'm sure you can, and rich get richer in some way or the other. I need to thank our guests, Bluff City Media's Anthony Sain and Jason Fitz. Make sure you stay tuned, as I said, for the aforementioned Jeffrey and Company. For Brad, I'm Jason.